This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome, everybody, to Prop Points here on VSiN. Jeff Erickson with Nick Whalen. We are with RotoWire.com. We got a big show for you today. We're excited about this. Going to recap more NFL draft. Busy NBA weekend. Nick's going to have a special hockey special that's going to be an hour later from now. You can tune in for that. No, we will not have that. It was a great hockey weekend as well. We'll get some hockey talk later this week on that. But we got Jim Coventry coming down the progressive guest line there. We're excited to have Jim on board with us talking a little NFL draft. And then we're going to preview tonight's baseball slate as well. By the way, it's also a huge bidding weekend, free agent acquisition budget weekend there for you, those of you fantasy players in baseball this week. Three big names of that I think we'll splice in a little bit of talk about that at some point during the show as well, because we are fantasy and betting combined on this show. But Nick, let's start off with the NFL draft. It starts off, I think you got to start off with, a lot of the big dialogue is about the quarterback position. Shedeur Sanders, let's just get this out of the way. I don't think there's a lot to say about Shedeur Sanders, but let's talk about this.
Yeah, the last we talked about this, Jeff, was on the show on Friday when, of course, Shedeur Sanders had not gone in round one, which at the time was somewhat surprising. I think as the draft, went along Thursday night, it became increasingly clear that there just wasn't that much interest in Shedeur Sanders. But I did not see that slide continuing all the way to the fifth round, right? We talked about it Friday, and I'm saying, wow, the Browns got two of the first four picks in the second round. It would be crazy if they didn't take him there. It was also wild that a few weeks ago we had the Saints at minus money. They were the favorites to draft Shedeur Sanders. Then it was the Steelers. There's all that smoke coming into the draft. And then, as he continued to fall, the Browns, kind of emerged as that favorite. Now, the Browns did end up taking him. So if you grabbed him at plus 190 on Friday morning, minus 190 on Friday morning, congratulations. I don't think anybody was forecasting him falling all the way to the fifth round. And yeah, I don't want to spend too much time on this, Jeff, because my take has been that Shedeur Sanders, the public figure, Shedeur Sanders, the celebrity, far exceeds Shedeur Sanders, the NFL prospect. And I think what we saw over the weekend, kind of clears that notion. But where he landed in Cleveland is now one of the most interesting and strangest and most bizarre quarterback rooms I've ever seen. I think you could sell me on any of the four or five options in that room, spending some time as the starter this season, whether it's Kenny Pickett, whether it's Joe Flacco, whether it's Dylan Gabriel, a quarterback who they took ahead of Shedeur Sanders in this draft. Unfortunately, though, we're not going to be done talking about this, because even Shedeur Sanders as the fourth string quarterback in Cleveland is going to continue to be a story. And he landed somewhere where he could conceivably start games this year.
Yep. And we have a graphic showing that he's got the second lowest odds to take the first snap in week one. It's Kenny Pickett's got the lowest odds, then Sanders, then Flacco, then Dylan Gabriel, who's taken two rounds before Sanders. If I were to bet on such a thing, I would not be someone to bet on such a thing. But if I were, it would be Von Joe Flacco for me. I think that seems like, to me, the logical play. Let's have the veteran who was the last good quarterback that Cleveland Browns have had in terms of any relative good. I mean, they made the playoffs 2 years ago with Joe Flacco at the helm. I think we forget that this was such a sad sack franchise last year. We forget that they made the playoffs 2 years ago with Flacco at the helm. Now, I think Flacco is not the same quarterback as he was 2 years ago. He was a facsimile of that last year with the Colts. I still think he takes the first snap.
Again, you could sell me on any of these guys, any single one of these guys, Jeff. I think there's a case for Flacco. I think there's a similar case for Kenny Pickett. Obviously not as established, not as successful as Joe Flacco, but at least he's taken starting snaps in that division, by the way, in the past in the NFL, where obviously you can't say that about Dylan Gabriel or Shedeur Sanders. And, like you said, we talk fantasy on the show. I'm not even really all that concerned as far as who's starting games week to week for the Cleveland Browns. It's more about, how does this affect Jerry Jeudy? How does this affect David Njoku? Is there, potentially another move coming in that running back room? They added Quinshon Judkins in round two. I like that pickup quite a bit. Like, there are some interesting pieces if we're talking fantasy here for the Cleveland Browns. And that's where the bigger impact, I think, is in terms of who that quarterback is. Cause I don't see this Browns team pushing for a playoff spot. I know they did it 2 years ago, like you said, with Joe Flacco, but I feel a lot worse about this roster now than I did at the time. Anytime it feels like the Browns have some semblance of momentum, something disastrous happens. In this case, it was the Deshaun Watson trade that obviously has put this franchise in a huge hole. But bottom line is, Shedeur Sanders ended up being the story of draft weekend, despite being a fifth round pick.
Yep. Our colleagues over at SiriusXM Fantasy, including our guest Jim Coventry, participated in a post-draft draft yesterday, which was redraft format there. Jerry Jeudy went in the sixth round in that draft as a point of reference. David Njoku dropped all the way to the 12th round. That has a lot to do with the position and his own health concerns as well. But just as a point of reference, that you can see where the Cleveland pass catchers are going. Let's talk a little Giants. Mm-hmm. They traded up into the first round. They get Jackson Dart. I don't mind the cost. I kind of also don't like their quarterback room. You have three quarterbacks, which means you have none. You have a lame duck coach, a lame duck GM. I don't think it hurts neighbors. We saw neighbors still going first round in drafts. He's still like, he's a first round draft price everywhere we go. But I'm not as big on Jackson Dart as other people are either. That's part of my kind of, my apprehension with that pick, with that trade, with that pick.
Yeah, Dart was, I believe, minus 200 to end up being selected by the New York Giants as the draft went along. So I think it, once the New Orleans Saints ended up kind of bowing out of the mix, it became clear that there was going to be, likely a destination for him in New York. They trade back into round one to get him, like you said, Jeff. And I think your evaluation of that trade 100% depends on how you view Jackson Dart, right? If you're a Jackson Dart supporter, you're like, okay, we got Abdul Carter, we traded back into round one and still got our quarterback and, added somebody who a lot of people like in round four at running back and Cam Scataboo. I'm a little iffier on him. I think he's going to be fine, but he's kind of another one of those guys who I feel like the celebrity that he became by the end of the college football season, maybe made him a bigger deal than he should be in terms of where he ranks among these NFL prospects. But overall, I think, again, if you're a Jackson Dart supporter, even if you think he has a chance to be an above average starter, I think you have to like the aggression that the Giants showed and, still being able to lock in an elite prospect at the top of the draft in Abdul Carter, even if you gave up some future draft capital, you had to do something. You had to do something at quarterback. And, it's another bizarre quarterback room overall. When you look at Russell Wilson, Jameis Winston, and now Jackson Dart, I have no idea who begins the season as the starter. My guess would be Russell Wilson, but we see this play out in a few spots every single year, Jeff. When there is a quarterback, especially a first round quarterback, sitting on the bench, even if the team says, we want to give him a full year, we want to let him immerse himself, learn on the fly, that never happens. That almost never happens because the team is not good enough. The fans are starting to clamor for that quarterback, and there's a ton of pressure on this organization right now, specifically the head coach and the GM.
Yeah, I kind of like what the Giants did in the draft, but it really comes down to, this is the Jackson Dart draft. Even with Abdul Carter at 1-3, it all is, did they get the quarterback right? If not, Dable's gone, Shane's gone, and they have to start all over.
I think that's exactly the mode you're in if you're the Giants, and they knew that going in, right? And I think the fact that they were willing to take this swing, one, it signals that I think they do like Jackson Dart. I think that was going to be Brian Dable's guy if they did take a quarterback, and two, it once again kind of doubles down on that notion that they felt like they needed to do something big. Like, this is I'm either losing my job or I'm saving my job draft for Joe Shane.
Yep, exactly right. We're going to talk a little NBA. Wild day yesterday in the NBA. But before that, are you still using your buddy's gut instinct as your betting strategy? Come on, you deserve better. RotoWire has the real tools that the pros use. Rankings, projections, updates, and data that doesn't sleep. Whether you're making picks, setting your fantasy lineup, or placing bets, our award-winning insights give you the edge you need. Get started today by heading over to rotowire.com and entering ROTO15 at checkout for 15% off any RotoWire product. Let's pivot on over to the NBA. Nick, we didn't get a chance to talk too much about this game earlier today on our SiriusXM show, but Knicks, Pistons. Mm-hmm. Obviously the attention is going to be on the no call at the end of the game, especially when you see so many other fouls getting called, so many other relative touch fouls. Brunson especially gets draws so many fouls over the course of this series. A clear foul in the waning seconds of the game turns into a no call. The NBA weighs in afterward and says it was a miss. Thanks a lot, guys. Yeah, appreciate that. If you're Detroit, you're like, oh, really? Did you really need to say that now? But Knicks take a 3-1 series lead. Huge, huge play in that game.
Huge, huge play for our under 5.5 games in this series as well, Jeff. Yes. That one has been in peril, it feels like, since this series started. And you got to give Detroit a ton of credit. We knew this would be a competitive series. I certainly didn't think the Knicks would just run through the Detroit Pistons, but they've made it even more difficult game to game than I ever expected. And absolutely should have been a foul. No question about that. Josh Hart made plenty of contact on Tim Hardaway Jr. in the corner. And, I'm typically not a one call swings the game, but that was one call that probably swung this game. You know, I think you feel pretty good about Tim Hardaway making at least two of those three free throws. But, you know, I think there are other things you could point to with Detroit. You know, the shooting has been, you know, an abomination for much of this series. You know, Hardaway goes 4 of 13 from three. Malik Beasley was fine, but he was just 3 of 9. They've each had some disaster games so far. You know, I thought the Knicks did a reasonable job, you know, at least making Cade Cunningham work for his 25, 10, and 10 triple-double. He's had a good series statistically, but it has not been easy for Cade Cunningham. And, you know, Knicks forced 17 turnovers in game four. I think that ultimately ended up being the difference. But on top of that, you know, the Knicks have also remembered, Jeff, that they have a huge advantage in this series at center with Karl Anthony Towns. I mean, he is fully back on track now. Two really good games back-to-back for Karl Anthony Towns after that bizarre game two where he, you know, was just not really involved at all in the second half. So looking ahead, you know, I do like the Knicks to close out this series tomorrow at home. They're 5.5-point favorites right now at DraftKings. I think that might be one where I would look at an alt number, maybe play it on the money line, because Detroit continues to make all these games really, really close. I mean, these last two wins for the Knicks have come by a combined 3 points.
Indeed, they have. I want to talk more Minnesota and Lakers. Maybe we'll get that on when we kind of preview this tonight's slate. We'll have to address that as well, because I thought that's a phenomenal game, phenomenal series. Both series involving the LA teams, but we got about 20 seconds left, so I don't want to race through that there. So we'll just hit that up. But just be aware, we're going to be previewing tonight's slate. Not only a couple of games on the slate. Does Cleveland close it out against Miami? Golden State, Houston should be a fun game as well. We'll hit that up. We're going to talk NFL draft with Jim Coventry coming down the Progressive guest line. And then I'm going to preview the MLB slate in the last segment tonight. This is Prop Points here on VSiN. We'll be right back.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points. Jeff Erickson and Nick Whalen here. Breaking news. It is confirmed. Dame Lillard suffered a torn Achilles tendon in the loss to the Pacers last night. Horrible, horrible break. Just a bad scene all around. Just the way it transpired, the way they reacted around it, what happened to the team afterward. Just a malaise hanging around the Bucks.
Yeah, Lillard made it through 6 minutes of action last night, and that injury occurred. And look, I mean, it's no surprise, right? If you were watching the game, if you've followed sports injuries, the reporting around this one, you know, the verbiage that was used, you know, when they come out like a half hour after the injury happens and you get the report that it's potentially severe, it's almost always severe in that case. So I think the writing was on the wall. It actually reminded me quite a bit, Jeff, of the Aaron Rodgers torn Achilles in week one last year, where, you know, the way Damian Lillard reacted, your first thought wasn't, oh, this is a serious injury. He's not writhing around in pain. He's just kind of grabbing at it. He sat there really stoically, much like Aaron Rodgers did. And I think kind of, you know, spent 10 or 15 seconds just accepting the reality, collecting his thoughts, right, before he ended up being helped off the court. So no surprise that we have this news confirmed. You know, it essentially rules out Damian Lillard, you would think, for most of next season, maybe all of the regular season, depending on that rehab timeline. He's still on the books at close to 55 mil for next year. He's got a player option at about 58.5 million the year after. I think with the way that these last couple of years have gone for Damian Lillard, you'd likely be picking that up and, you know, maybe looking at one more contract depending on how these next two seasons go after that. But look, the bigger story here is that this series is in all likelihood over. You know, they were probably going to lose anyway last night, even if Damian Lillard made it through that game. The Bucks' defensive issues just really have not been solved whatsoever. We're four games into the series. They look just as bad defensively as they did to begin. And it's really starting to feel like this might be the final nail in the coffin for the Giannis Antetokounmpo era in Milwaukee. And I think Giannis has said all the right things. There have been reports in the last couple of weeks that, no, he's not already looking at other teams, you know, like some superstars in the past have. But realistically, if you're Giannis, what would be keeping you in Milwaukee other than loyalty, right? I mean, it was already going to be a really dire situation with a healthy Damian Lillard. You now take him out of the mix. I don't know what the Bucks do. They don't control their own draft pick until 2031. There are no promising young players on the roster who you could see taking a huge step forward next season. You know, some of the veterans on this roster, they have decisions to make. The future of Bobby Portis, Brooke Lopez, his contract is up after this season. So this has rapidly turned into something, Jeff, where I could almost see it playing out like Damian, like the end of Damian Lillard's career in Portland, the end of Kevin Garnett's career in Minnesota. Now, the big difference, of course, is that Giannis brought this team a championship in 2021. You do have that to hang your hat on. But if this ultimately comes down to, you know, mid-July and Giannis is kind of softly asking, hey, you know, maybe look at some trades. Yeah, I'm looking to get out of here. I don't think it would be a situation where the fan base would turn on him, right? I don't think it would be hostile. I think if you're a realistic Milwaukee Bucks fan right now, you're looking at this situation and saying, if I'm Giannis, what is keeping me here? I have no chance to compete in the near future.
Yeah, I think that's right. I like to draw the comparison between the Bucks and the Phoenix Suns, a common pincushion here on this channel, on this show. I don't think it's as dire, but it's similar because they have the star-based model. They don't have a lot of their own picks in the future. They don't have a lot of depth. And, you know, they at least got to the playoffs. They got to the five seed. But it's got to be couched as a disappointment. And you take a big swing for Dillard and you miss, and what are you left with? And that's the problem.
Right. And look, I was very supportive of that deal at the time. I still think you would do it over again. Obviously, knowing how it played out, it's been about as disappointing as it possibly could have been. You know, Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo will have played two full postseason games together. And, you know, in one of those, Damian Lillard was making his return from a blood clot. Like you could argue they've never really played two fully healthy playoff games together when both of them are actually in form. So, you know, I think that's if you're looking for like something somewhat positive, you know, if you're the Bucks, it's like you could at least say like, well, we never even got a chance for it to work, right? It wasn't a complete failure because of the injuries that ended up befalling both of these players in back-to-back playoffs. It's just bad luck more than anything else. And again, I think you have to do that deal. You have to do that deal. If you have a chance to acquire Damian Lillard, who at the time was a top 10, top 15 at worst player in the NBA, you just have to do it. And it's been brutal the way it worked out. You know, in a roundabout way, you ended up handing Drew Holiday to the Celtics. He goes on and wins a title, but like Drew Holiday has not played all that well. He's a cog in what's a really, really good machine right now in Boston. And look, we could quibble about the Kyle Kuzma trade. It looks awful. He's been terrible in the series. I'm not sure the current version of Chris Middleton, if he's on this roster, really makes a difference. It probably gives you more than Kuzma is, but it's not like you put Middleton back on this Bucks team and you feel like they're a title contender. It's a team that went all in. The move didn't work. And sometimes that's just how it goes in the NBA.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of stories, you know, stars, at least that never got it. At least you got the one title in 2021. Trying to extend that championship window, it didn't work out. Let's move on. We got a lot more to talk about for this particular slate. Big game tonight in Golden State. I think this is the one I want to focus on. Warriors looking to take a 3-1 series lead tonight. Jimmy Butler, we just heard on Money Moves that he did go through walkthrough today. JVT with the heads up on that. Appreciate that. But, you know, Houston couldn't take advantage of Butler not being there. Now they may not have to face him in this game tonight.
Yeah. First of all, congrats to JVT, by the way, now the full-time Money Moves co-host with Stormy Bonantoni. So very, very cool there. Looking forward to them being our lead-in over these next few months. But yeah, I think all the indications as of right now are that Jimmy Butler likely makes his return tonight. Warriors are 4-point home favorites. They closed, you know, 2.5 in game three. And like you said, really disappointing game for Houston on Saturday. You catch a huge break with the Butler injury. He ends up being ruled out. And that was a game that it feels like he absolutely had to win. And, you know, Jalen Green, we praised him a lot last week, came back with a huge game two after he was brutal in game one. Pendulum swung back the other way in game three. He was not good. Fred VanVleet continues to shoot it horribly against the Warriors this season. That extends all the way back to the regular season. And, you know, if you're looking at Jalen Green's points prop tonight, by the way, only 18.5. He's gone under that number in 6 of 8 games against the Warriors this season. That is a total stay away for me. I mean, we've seen, you know, so many different versions of him already in this series. Took 18 threes in game two. The volume wasn't really there in game three. But, you know, I think the biggest disappointment when Butler is not out there, if you're talking about game three, is that you have an opportunity to essentially focus your entire defense on slowing down Stephen Curry. You're not worried about Brandon Podziemski. You're not that worried about Jonathan Kuminga back in the starting lineup or Draymond Green or Quentin Post. And the Rockets couldn't do it. I mean, Curry goes for 36-9-7 without that secondary threat. So this obviously becomes what feels like a must win now for Houston. Don't want to go down 3-1 to this Warriors team with potentially another home game lurking for them in game six. In terms of what I'm looking at tonight, Jeff, Fred VanVleet, to me, I just said it, he's so frustrating to watch, but Over 2.5 threes at minus 125 to me makes some sense. It's just really a volume play. He's taken about 10 threes per game so far in these series. Again, not shooting it well, but the volume is going to be there. He's always going to keep firing. He gets a really long leash, really the longest leash of anybody in this rotation, basically playing 40 minutes every night. I would look at Curry over 5.5 assists at minus 130. He's got 18 assists the last two games. And yeah, if Butler's back, he does handle a little more playmaking, but still think we're getting a good number here, considering the Warriors are not converting Curry's potential assists at nearly the rate that you would expect. The numbers say you should be averaging closer to about 8.5 assists per game in this series, so we'll trust that. And then you got to look at the total here. Really, really low, right? It's not as low as it was in game three, but 202.5. No official play for me on this, but I would lean under, even with the expectation that Butler's back in the mix. The Rockets have failed to hit 100 points in 6 of those 8 games against the Warriors this season.
Indeed. So, and that's why Van Vliet gets such a leash, is because they don't have alternatives. You know, they just don't have anybody else to go to there to try to hit that. We're going to talk a little Lakers and Timberwolves, because there's also talk about some depth issues in that series. The NBA playoffs are here, and so is the VSiN Killer Sports NBA Playoff Challenge. We've invited 15 sharp minds from the world of VSiN and Killer Sports to go head to head, making 38 picks each from the start of the playoffs all the way through the NBA Finals. That's a total of 570 NBA playoff picks, all available to VSiN Pro subscribers. Picks are locked in 1 hour before the first game each day, so you'll have fresh insights to guide your bets every step of the postseason. And right now, you can get full VSiN Pro access through August 1st for just $59. Don't miss this playoff edge. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. Talked about the Rockets' lack of depth and maybe weak links. The Lakers are team weak link. You know, they have no center to speak of right now, and it really is showing in the series against the Timberwolves.
We knew it would be an issue, and I think it's been an even bigger problem than the Lakers maybe expected. And it's not like Rudy Gobert is just, you know, dominating this series by any means. He was 1 of 6 from the field, did have 10 rebounds yesterday, but the Lakers' rotation has just gotten extremely thin. I mean, they played literally 5 guys the entire second half, and that to me, that signaled a level of desperation, like knowing that we absolutely have to win this game. Lakers led by 10 after a big third quarter, and it's just shocking to me, Jeff, that you have LeBron James, Luka Doncic, Austin Reeves on the court for the entire second half, the entire fourth quarter, and you couldn't close out this game. They had a multi-possession lead late and just couldn't get the stops, couldn't hit the shots that they needed. And you know, I think it's easy to look at Luka, to look at LeBron, and say these guys aren't closing. Austin Reeves, to me, has been the weak link of that big three. Missed some big threes late in this game. You know, was scoreless in the first half. We talked about him needing to be a 23, 25 point per game guy in the series. Just hasn't been that guy so far.
No, and thus they've been forced to play all their starters all the way through. NFL Talk with Jim Covetrue coming up next. This is Prop Points.
Watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points here on VSiN. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson hanging out with you, taking you up to the top of the hour. Make It Rain with Adam Schein coming up next here on VSiN. As always, that starts at 3 p.m. Eastern. Got a friend, Jim Covetrue, on the line to help us break down everything that happened with the NFL draft over the weekend. He joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. And Jim, want to kind of frame a lot of our discussion around the Rookie of the Year odds, which are, of course, up and updated at most books. Ashton Jeanty, unsurprisingly, your favorite at DraftKings. He's 2-1. Cam Ward, plus 230. And Travis Hunter, who we'll talk a little bit about later, plus 750 to be the offensive rookie of the year. Also plus 750 to be the defensive rookie of the year. But Jim, you've been all over the NFL draft. You were providing coverage all weekend. I know you already hopped in an early 2025 fantasy draft as well, so we can talk about that. But let's start with Ashton Jeanty. He goes to the Raiders at number 6. You know, one of the potential forecasted landing spots. You know, Jaguars ended up emerging. The Bears were thought to be an option, but he does end up in Vegas. I know from the drafts that I've seen, including the one that you were a part of, Jim, already going inside the top 5. So what is your evaluation of Jeanty and that landing spot with Vegas?
There are two things I really like about Ashton Jeanty's landing spot. The offensive line is not as bad as people think. Tackles are really good. They're good enough in the middle. Jeanty will have some room to run, which is sometimes we don't always get that for our rookie running backs. The depth chart, Raheem Mostert, Sincere McCormick, Zamir White. Looks like Ashton Gentry's to get all the work he can handle. And that's what we want here. Let's throw a third bonus in there. Pete Carroll coaching the team, you know they're going to run the rock. So this is great. Gentry three down player. This is clearly why many are going to bet him at the chalk. And it makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about a couple of your hits in the draft. Colson Loveland, first tight end taken. You and Nick Whalen share this in common. Talk about his landing spot in Chicago. Cole Kmet's still there. They're going to run enough two tight end sets to make this work.
Brock Wright was the backup tight end in Detroit last year when Ben Johnson coached there. He played 49% of the snaps. So I think we can make a reasonable assumption that Cole Kmet will play about the same role. Kmet can block well enough. I know he's a better receiver, but that's the way it is. Colston Loveland is what we call a movable chess piece. He can line up on the outside, traditional tight end in the slot. He is a weapon. And with the Bears having DJ Moore, Romo Odunze, the opportunity to weaponize this tight end is great. And the reason I thought he'd be the first tight end off the board is if a team was going to look for that weapon. And we know the league plays 73% zone defense. How do you attack zones best? Often in the middle of the field, but with a lot of movement. And that's what Colson Loveland provides.
Jim, we, of course, talked a lot about Shedeur Sanders, Jackson Dart, the quarterbacks heading into this draft. We knew Cam Ward would be going number one, and now you ended up hitting Jackson Dart as the second quarterback off the board. He, of course, went to the New York Giants. But one of the teams that we thought would be interested in perhaps both of those quarterbacks was the Pittsburgh Steelers. They end up going defensive tackle Derek Harmon in round one. They had a running back in Caleb Johnson in round three. Of course, did not have their second round pick by virtue of the Metcalf trade. They did add Will Howard out of Ohio State in round six, but more of a depth option than anything else. You look at that quarterback room right now. It's Mason Rudolph. It's Will Howard. It's Skylar Thompson. What does that tell you about what the Steelers are going to continue to look for this offseason? Do you expect this to still be an Aaron Rodgers spot?
It very possibly is, but I've been on record as saying that Aaron Rodgers has been avoiding Pittsburgh because I saw last year when he played with the Jets, you could tell with some older quarterbacks when they don't want to get hit, and Rodgers' posture seemed to be that. If he plays for Arthur Smith's offense, you are going to see a lot of play action with downfield shots having Metcalf, George Pickens, and when you're throwing downfield shots off play action and the team on defense brings pressure, you're going to get hit. And I think that's primarily why he does not want to play there. I don't know if Kirk Cousins struggled last year with still the recovering phase of his Achilles. If that was the case, and if he can do functional drop back or functional play action, that is a possible move that can still be made. I imagine the Falcons could be definitely convinced into that. I think Cousins, again, depending on the health, could be a better landing spot than Aaron Rodgers.
I like that. I think that Kirk Cousins strikes me as a Mike Tomlin sort of guy. It just figures like that's a fit. I think they drafted kind of accordingly too. I think that's kind of interesting to see that. I want to ask you a little bit about Tet McMillan in Carolina. I think it's a underrated landing spot because I don't think they have a ball winner on the outside. I don't think they have that guy that is going to go get those fade routes in the end zone. I think McMillan is that guy. I know that Carolina had a load of defensive concerns, but I kind of like the landing spot for him.
So I'm excited for Tet McMillan to a degree as well. Now, remember, Xavier Lee gets there, and he was the number 32 pick in last year's draft, and he is a very big-bodied perimeter receiver. Now, Bryce Young's problem is often arm strength to that perimeter, but in terms of a red zone factor, I honestly think that Leggett could hold up a bit better. But what I like about Tet McMillan, he's that classic X receiver. You can line him up on the line of scrimmage against press man coverage. He can win on third and seven. He can get to the middle of the field as well. He's a versatile. And that's what Bryce Young needs right now. He needs a versatile receiver. He has Adam Thielen in the slot, fine, 35 years old. But you're right. Tet McMillan is in a good spot, and Bryce Young has shown the one place he's decent is the middle of the field. What I do worry about is the passing production. Even though we thought for fantasy that Bryce Young did well down the stretch, in the last five games, he was averaging about 28 pass attempts. That's not a lot, and his yardage was typically in the 200 range in all but week 18. So we'll see how that shakes out, if maybe Bryce Young is better than he was, but still not very good. But that said, McMillan will clearly dominate targets.
More from our guy Jim Coventry in a moment. But first, are you looking for a new way to feel the rush this Kentucky Derby? First Bet is your front row seat to the fastest 2 minutes in sports and so much more. Bet on the Derby and hundreds of other races every day over at firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. New users can use the promo code VSIN200 to grab a $200 sign-up bonus. Get ready. The Derby starts at firstbet.com. And again, make sure you use that promo code VSIN200. $200 sign-up bonus coming your way over at firstbet.com. Jim Coventry here with us on the Progressive Guest Line. Jim, I want to keep looking at these Rookie of the Year odds. Tet McMillan, by the way, 14-1 at DraftKings. And we mentioned Travis Hunter. I'm curious to get your thoughts on the Jaguars trading up, the capital that they ended up surrendering in order to grab Travis Hunter. But, you know, when I look at him at plus 750 for Offensive Rookie of the Year, plus 750 for Defensive Rookie of the Year, it's a unique situation, right? We've never had a player listed under both markets. Is there a way that, you know, if Hunter truly plays both ways, as much as the Jaguars already are claiming that he will, could those things kind of work against each other where by the end of the year, voters could say, well, I don't know which one to vote for. Can I put him down for both?
That's a very interesting question. And here's the problem. I fully believe that we will see Travis Hunter mainly as a wide receiver, and I think he'll play packages at cornerback. And here's the problem. It's not a talent issue. It's a stamina issue. There are probably many other NFL players that could play some capacity on defense if they're an offensive player. But why don't they do it? Because playing 65 snaps a game on one side wears you out over the course of the season. Now, if you're going to tell me you're going to play 90, 100 snaps a week, when players wear down in the NFL, it's across the board. Everybody is equally worn out in the second half of the season, so you don't notice how worn out they are. If Travis Hunter was to play on both sides of the ball, he would wear out at an exponentially faster rate than the other players, and it would be a major problem. As in terms of him being the Rookie of the Year receiver, he has work there. He's not quite polished. He'll be very good, but the number two to Brian Thomas is going to be a factor here. I think he's going to be worked in. He's going to improve, but he's not going to reach his apex as a receiver till his second or third year, in my opinion.
Defensive Rookie of the Year, he's got the second lowest odds behind Abdul Carter. Others on that list, Mikael Williams, Jalen Walker at 9-1, Jihad Campbell at 12-1, Mason Graham 14-1, and my Bengal, Shamar Stewart at 16-1. Now, I know you like that pick better than I do. Let's make the case. You know, the relative athletic score is through the roof, and that's the case in favor of him. The production is down through the floor. 4.5 career sacks at Texas A&M. Not even great run defense grades. Sell me on Shamar Stewart here in this last 30 seconds.
This is important because if Trey Hendrickson is happy enough to play, which that's going to be a question, if he's going to be on the field and not sitting out, Shamar Stewart is going to benefit from all the attention that Hendrickson gets. So that's a wild card betting this early, if not knowing that. Right now, I like Mikael Williams a bit better because we know Nick Bosa is going to be there, and Nick Bosa has that gravitational pull like Hendrickson, which right now gives me the edge. But if Trey Hendrickson's there, yes, give me Shamar Stewart.
All right, there we have it. Jim Coventry, everybody, helping us sell our own Jeff Erickson here on the Bengals' first-round pick against Shamar Stewart. 16-1 right now to take home Defensive Rookie of the Year. We're going to talk some baseball on the other side. Jeff Erickson's best bets for the Monday MLB slate coming up next on Prop Points.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points here on VSiN. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson, closing out the show by breaking down this 8-game MLB Monday. Jeff, got one game coming our way in the mid-afternoon. That is Mets Nationals. So why not start there? Mets minus 175 on the money line over at DK. High total, sitting at 10 even. This is Griffin Canning going up against Trevor Williams. I know you're looking at the Mets here, Jeff, but this is one of several teams right now around Major League Baseball that has some closer issues.
Yeah, what's going on with Edwin Diaz? You know, he had the cramping, he had the hip that they listed as the injury there that he wasn't able to pitch on Friday. Did get the save on Saturday, 22 pitch inning. And it was weird because he got off to a rough start, which is like almost all of his outings this year. That first batter has been pretty dicey. Francisco Alvarez had a mound visit, and after that, Diaz like struck out the side after that. Threw 22 pitches. Didn't pitch yesterday. Didn't see an explanation for it there. Something to watch for just a little bit there. Like, make sure he's available. Meanwhile, the pitching matchup today. This is deceptive pitchers day on the old slate here at the old ball yard. There's a number of pitchers on today's slate that look like they might be decent, might be cromulent. They're not. They're just ticking time bombs waiting to happen. Trevor Williams isn't even decent. He's a pretty tough pitcher to watch there. He has been a little unlucky, 378 FIP, but a 5.11 ERA. But that's what happens when you put the ball in play so much. Fastball velocity is down to 87.1%. He just doesn't strike batters out. That's never been his case. It seems like it's getting worse. The Mets actually have a pretty decent track record against him. The Mets, meanwhile, they're 19-9, and they haven't even gotten much from Juan Soto yet. Mark Vientos has had a pretty awful year, slightly coming to life, 5-game hitting streak. I think this is a case there where the Mets are sitting pretty right now. 19-9 with all these things that have gone wrong, missing two starting pitchers. Paying attention to today's game and, you know, getting back on track there. I'll pay the price on the Mets money line, minus 175. Brutal loss yesterday. I know they coughed up a lead. They had a huge lead in that game. But assuming Diaz is there, assuming they get the game to late innings, I think they finish the job. So give me the Mets on the minus 175 today.
Let's go over to the American League East. You got the Yankees and the O's starting off the series. Will Warren going up against Tomoyuki Sugano. Yankees now up to minus 130 favorites on the money line at DraftKings. 9.5 is our total. Another team, Jeff, with some closure issues. A little bit more severe for this New York team compared to the Mets. Devin Williams officially replaced, at least for now, as the closer over the weekend. Yankees going to go forth with Luke Weaver. Yankees swept a doubleheader yesterday against Toronto. Meanwhile, what is going on with the O's, man? They get swept over the weekend. Oh. They've now lost 6 of their last 7, down to 10-17 on the year.
Yeah, and just horrible pitching. Just awful, awful starting pitching. Worst starting pitching in baseball, and that includes the Rockies. That just shows where they're at. And, you know, a lot of this was first guessing. We could see it at the time. They let Corbin Burns walk. Maybe they didn't let him walk. He chose to walk. They may not have had a chance. He wanted to be out on the West Coast, but they didn't replace him is the point. Last year at the trade deadline, they had a chance to maybe, you know, trade Kobe Mayo for an elite starting pitcher. They didn't do that. They went with the lesser deal. They traded, Connor Norby to the Marlins, got Trevor Rogers. Rogers was terrible last year with the Marlins, is hurt now, is working his way back, and is not doing well. There's no help on the way right now for the O's. That's the worst part about this here. They got unlucky with Grayson Rodriguez and Zach Eflin getting hurt. Rodriguez, though, has been hurt a lot over his career. You can't expect more than 125 innings from him anyhow. It's just been rough. It's been really rough there. Sugano is their best pitcher right now, but this is like Mr. Deception himself. You know, he's gone 7 innings in the last 2 starts. I was concerned about his length. He does not strike out batters at all. 8% K percentage, 7.2 swing strike percentage there. He's gotten by with a 228 BABIP, but I feel like a correction is right around the corner with him. He might be one of those ultimate pitch to contact guys, but you need to prove it to me. 6 home runs allowed so far already in his starts, 4 by left-handed hitters. I don't think Will Warren is all that great of a starting pitcher either for the Yankees. So I like the over 9.5, even with the big number there at minus 108, I'll take that. Sprinkle a little Jazz Chisholm, plus 650 on an anytime home run. Looking for those that short porch and right field. Look for those left-handed hitters to take advantage of Sugano, who does allow home runs. I think you could play some home run props today in this game.
Another fun game in the American League. Tigers on the road at the Astros tonight. Houston minus 120 on the money line. Detroit plus 100. Lower total here at 7.5. This is Jack Flaherty going up against Ronel Blanco. How do you break down this pitching matchup?
You know, it's funny because the Astros are a favorite, even though I think the Tigers are a strong favorite in the pitching matchup here. I think Flaherty's been excellent. He's got the form he showed with Detroit last year, went before the trade to the Dodgers. Strikeout percentage is high. The fastball velocity is up. Really good numbers all across the board. 30.6% K percentage there. Ronel Blanco has really struggled. Was best coming off his best start. Only one run allowed against the Blue Jays. 6 2/3 innings, but just, you know, he's not another guy that doesn't strike out a ton of batters, and his strikeout rate is way down, 20% down from 24.6%. You know, his fielding independent ERA is 4.55. He's not a strong pitcher. So I kind of like Detroit getting plus odds on the money line at plus 100. Houston's struggling to hit for power still too. Bottom three team in terms of slugging, in terms of isolated slugging, bottom five in WRC plus. They're just not a good hitting team, and they're very right-handed. They only have one left-handed hitter. It's a great one in Jordan Alvarez, but it's amazing that this roster is just so right-handed right now.
All right, let's take a look at a battle in the NL Central. We got the Cardinals in Cincinnati tonight. Cincy minus 122 on the money line. 9.5 is our total there. Reds all of a sudden, by the way, in second place in the NL Central, just a game and a half back of the Chicago Cubs. They were able to leapfrog the Brewers this weekend. That's what happens when you have the Colorado Rockies rolling into town. But should be a more competitive series, you would think, to begin this week. What do you look at in Cardinals Reds?
Yeah, you got a struggling offense. I give you the Orioles and Rockies in two of your three most recent series, and the Marlins being the good pitching staff of those three. I like a couple things. You know, I play Novel V. Marte again in DFS if you got him on that right slate. Interesting pitching matchup here. Andre Pallante is another pitch to contact guy. This is, I'm telling you, we got very few strikeout guys on today's slate. 14.3 K percentage. Totally relies on the ground ball, 67% ground ball rate this year. It's worked against the Reds in his career. If you look at a little BVP, you know, Reds hitters, 187 batting average, 275 on base, 218 slug against him. So they're not doing any damage against Pallante. So that's something to watch for there. Reds haven't even hit at home yet. 75 WRC plus at home, hitting just 224 at home. They've had two big games, one's against the Mariners, one against the Rangers. Other than that, the bats have been really quiet. I think some of that's weather related. So that's something that maybe you want to look out for a little bit there in terms of just look at the weather forecast on Reds games going forward. Once it heats up in Cincinnati, look for that ball to start flying out. Today, 79 degree temperature is projected there. So maybe this is a better hitting environment. We'll see about that one. I kind of like the under on this. It's the Reds' first game back from Coors. Usually it takes a little bit of an adjustment after you play a Coors Field series. So 9.5 is a big number for the total. I'll take the under 9.5 at minus 115.
Before we get to our G-Bank best bets of the day, Jeff, let's take a quick look at A's Rangers. I know you're looking at the A's money line here. Took 2 out of 3 early last week from this Rangers team.
Yeah, and J.P. Sears on the mound for the A's. He beat the Rangers last week, and he's been pretty good all season long. I think he's the A's best starter. Patrick Corbin on the mound, got a 3.77 ERA, but again, the expected ERA numbers. FIP is at 5.42, another guy that is not striking out a ton of guys. We've seen what Corbin's done in the past. I'll take the A's at minus 110 on the money line.
Our best bets of the day are brought to you by GBank, the official bank of VSIN. GBank is up in the ante with up to a $750 bonus for new GBank Visa Signature Card customers. First, new customers who spend $1,000 on eligible purchases within 90 days from opening that account get a $250 bonus. And if you spend $50,000 on gaming and sports app loads within 30 days, you'll receive another $500 bonus. So potentially $750 in bonuses coming your way via GBank. You can apply now at VSiN.com/GBank. That's VSiN.com/GBank. Subject to credit approval. Terms and conditions apply. Your best bet of the night, Jeff. It's coming to us from the NBA.
Yeah, and a game we haven't talked about yet either. Cavs and Heat. It's kind of a square play, but I'm going to take the Cavs to close out the Heat. -8.5 on the, I'll just take the -8.5 at -110. I just think they've figured the Heat out. They figured out how to attack all their weak spots, and there's copious weak spots on the Heat.
I like it. I like it. 79% of the handle at the DraftKings Sportsbook coming in on the Cavs to cover that 8.5. You can find those splits, of course, over at VSiN.com. I'm sticking with the play in that game as well, Jeff. I'm going to Davion Mitchell, over 12.5 points. He's hit this easily in every game in this series so far. It's -115 at DraftKings. And if you're looking to pick up a little bit more value, maybe take a stab at Max Strus, over 2.5 threes. He's 3-for-3 on that so far in the series. Tyler Hero, over 2.5 threes, another bet that I'm looking at for tonight. That's going to wrap it for the Monday edition of Prop Points. We'll be back at you tomorrow. More NFL draft reactions, more NBA previews. We'll talk some hockey. But keep it right here. Make it rain with Adam Schein coming up next on VSiN.